Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kof Ched Amud Bet, five lines from the bottom by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing that which was mentioned in the Mishnah, that there was an incident where they had confusion with regards to the light of the moon being mistaken for the light or crack of dawn, and therefore they began to process the Tamid Shel Shachar, and they shechted it before the time that was allowed, and therefore they had to take it out to the Beit HaSreifa, and that's why in the Mishnah they have all this more involved questioning about how much light or where the light is in order to be certain that it was the daybreak and not the light of the moon. The Gemara says, how can you confuse the light of the moon with the light of the daybreak? Vatanya, Rabbi Omer, we have a braita where Rabbi says, Enu domet timur shel levana, the timur shel chama. The light of the moon, here the word timur is used, which is a reference to the date tree, as Rashi says, which means like a palm, a beam of light that rises. So the light that is emitted by the moon on the horizon from the moon rising is different than the timur shel chama, the light that is emitted by the sun as it is rising. Timur shel levana, the light or the beam of light that's projected by the moon when it is rising, is mitamer ve'oleh kemakel, goes up straight like a staff. Timur shel chama mafzia lekan ukan. On the other hand, the light of the sun or the daybreak diffuses and lights up all around it, not just in a particular location. So from Rabbi's statement over here, it's very clear that there's a difference between the sun rising and the moon rising, and how is it that they confuse between the two? So Tana Debei Rabbi Yishmael, Yomem Unanaya. It was cloudy, and a cloudy day, Umavtzia Lekan Lukan. And therefore the moonlight was also dispersed or diffused because of the clouds, and it didn't look like just an upright or straight beam of light, and therefore they confused that light with the light of the sun. So Amar Papa Shmamina, Yoma Deiva. On a day that is cloudy, Kulei Shimsha, there is light everywhere, the sun is everywhere. The way that the Rabbeinu Hananel describes it over here is that in a time period where the sun normally comes out, it shines in particular places, and then there are shadows cast in other places, and it does not light those areas. On the other hand, on a cloudy day, the sun gets everywhere, and the sun affects even areas that are normally shaded, it is affected by the sun. The reason for that can be twofold. Here are the understandings of the Rishonim are either that the light is somewhat like a liquid, and therefore when the clouds cover over the liquid, then they look for whatever openings, wherever places they can fit through. And so since the sun can't get through its normal location because of the clouds that are blocking it, therefore it goes to any opening or any place that it can find to emit light. So that's one way to understand it. Rashi over here even suggests that it is connected to the Chalonot HaRakia, the windows in the Rakia, which we have spoken about before in the end of the Gemara in Pesachim, with regards to the sunrise, that they thought that the sun penetrated through the Rakia, through a chalon, through a window. When it came through that window, according to Rashi, if the clouds are blocking the exit of the sun has to find other ways to get out, or other ways to disperse. And so because of that, the light is spread into places. The Rabbeinu Hananel claims that are normally shaded, but even on a cloudy day will have sunlight, or be affected by the sun. Or it just means that anywhere where there's an opportunity for the sun to get through, the sun will shine through. And the Gemara wants to know, am I nafkamino? What does it matter? What's the halachic ramifications of what Rav Papa is telling us? So the first of it is l'shtuchei orot, to put out hides. If you want to dry out hides in order to work them and to tan them, they need to be in the sunlight or they need to be under the heat. So even if it's a cloudy day, the suggestion here is that the sun still penetrates through the clouds or finds the openings in the clouds and still will be effective in helping to dry out or work the hides. Inami l'kadadorish Rava. Or it's for the issue that Rava raised, and this is back to the Gemara in Pesachim, that isha lo talush lo b'chama lo b'chamei chama. That a woman may not need the dough for the matzot, not in the sunlight, in direct sunlight, or not in chamei chama, things that are heated by the sunlight. So you would have thought possibly that you could then knead the dough on a cloudy day because it's not exposed to the sun. And Rav Papa comes along and says that's not the case, especially according to what Rabbeinu Hananel suggests over here, that the sun penetrates even areas that are normally shaded. It can penetrate in a day that is cloudy. Or even according to the way Rashi says it, that just because it's cloudy doesn't mean that the sun doesn't get little locations or places where it gets through, and it is effective at heating the world, and therefore it's problematic for baking matzot. And some of the Rishonim, including the Ritva over here, make the suggestion that the ability to bake matzot has to be done under a roof. Even if there's shade, even if there is cloud cover, That's not enough to shield oneself from the sun. Based on this Gemara over here, you would have to be indoors. You'd have to be under a roof in order to bake the matzahs or use the water to knead the dough for the matzahs. So they're not influenced by the heat of the sun or the daytime ambient temperatures, and it won't cause it to rise faster than normal. And so that's another nafkamina to this statement of Rav Papa. And now the Gemara is going to continue with a series of correlated statements. The first of which is Amar Rav Nachman, Zuhuma de Shimsha Kashi Mishimsha. The Zuhuma of the Shemesh, of the sun, is worse than the sun itself. The way that Rashi explains it, using the girsa that we have in our Gemara, is that that situation that we just had before, and that's what correlates this to the previous Gemara, is that when you have a cloudy day and the sun bursts forth in small locations where there's parting of the clouds, the light that is emitted in those cracks is more powerful than the sun emitted from the direct sunlight. That it seems to be because, the Gemara says over here, v'simaneich, the way to remember that is, dana dechala, a barrel of vinegar. And the way Rashi explains that is, if you have a barrel of vinegar that's left to ferment, and it becomes very strong and potent, then when you punch a small hole in the barrel, that which is emitted from that small hole will be very pungent and very concentrated vinegar, and you will feel it, or you'll sense it much more than if you just open the barrel completely. Because then it diffuses into the air. Similarly, the concentration of the sun in those small cracks is much greater than the concentration of the sun when it's totally exposed and not focused through the clouds. Again, this goes back to what we just discussed previously, the idea that maybe the sun light is like a liquid, and therefore it gravitates towards those smaller openings, and in those smaller openings, it's more concentrated, the light. That's the explanation that Rashi gives. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel, with our girsa, gives a different explanation, and he says that the heat of the sun is felt even after the sun has left. That means that in an area or location where the sun was shining, after the sun passes that location, that area remains hotter, and it's hotter than being in an area where the sun itself is shining. And the simaneich, the siman is dana dechalo, a barrel of vinegar. Even after one pours out the vinegar from the barrel, the smell and the pungency of the vinegar is still embedded in the barrel even after you've taken the vinegar out, and sometimes it's more potent than the vinegar itself. And so that's the way that the Rabbeinu Hananel explains it given our girsa. On the other hand, you can see here from the Aruch that there was an alternate girsa over here, which is Zira Deshimsha, and that is explained as Chamuta Shemesh. The heat of the sun is more pronounced in an area where it was once shining and now has passed on than in areas where it's currently shining. And again, they explain the siman of the barrel of vinegar, similar to the way that the Rabbeinu Hananel did with the girsa that we have. Then the Gemara says, Shavrire de Shimsha, according to Rashi, means the blindness of the sun, Kashumi Shimsha, is more problematic than the sun itself. Here, Rashi again connects it to the previous Gemara and says that in a situation where the sun is penetrating out of those cracks or those small gaps in the clouds, it is more dangerous in terms of blinding the individual than having exposure to the sun directly, which is interesting because we know that when there is an eclipse, they always warn not to look at the sun or not to look at the eclipse, because when the sunlight is covered up partially, the eye doesn't turn away from it, and then it can end up burning a hole in the eye of the individual because they are exposed to the sunlight for a much longer period of time than they normally would, because they would turn away. So you could argue the same thing over here, that you have sun that is just piercing through small cracks. The person might be able to look at that for a longer period of time. It would be more dangerous for their eyesight than look at the sun directly, where they would have to turn away very quickly and it wouldn't have that type of impact on them. That's the way Rashi explains Shavrire de Shimsha. And Mitzimaneich, and the sign or the way to remember that is Dilfa, a drip. And as Rashi says over here, water that is dripping on an individual is much more difficult to them, problematic for them, uncomfortable for them, than going into the water itself. Had you just jumped into the whole water, it wouldn't bother you as much as when you have a drip that's coming down on you. So over here, drips of sunlight are much more problematic than a full exposure to the sun. So Rashi translates the word shavri over here from the word sanverim, which is translated in Aramaic as shavriri, and therefore he's speaking about blindness of the eye. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel says, shavriri de shimsha perish shemesh hanichnas min achor, a sun which comes through a hole. And in that sense, shavrire is probably from the word shever, a crack that allows the sun to come through. So seemingly it seems to be reiterating what, according to Rashi, was the previous statement of the Gemara, which is that the sun, when it penetrates through those small cracks, is more powerful than when they're exposed directly to the sun. And that is the explanation that the Rabbeinu Hanano brings. Now, the Gemara moves from that over to other areas where there's a comparison between something that seemingly is not the item itself, but a derivative of the item, yet it's more potent or problematic than the item itself. The first of which, and has the most relevance, is Hirhurei Aveira, Kashumi Aveira. Thoughts about doing an Aveira are more problematic than the Aveira itself. Generally, when the Gemara speaks generically about Aveira, it's a reference to Arayot, and you can see that Rashi interprets it that way. He says, Tavat Nashim, the desire for women is Kashim Lachish et Bisaro Yoter Migufo Shel Maaseh. It wears down the body, it weakens the individual more than the action itself. So that's according to Rashi, the issue here about Hirurei Aveira is that it takes a toll on the person's body, meaning that the thoughts about the problematic behavior wears the person down more than the Aveira itself. And somewhere along those lines, the Tosfot Rid explains over here that the Hirurei Aveira are more seductive or draw the Yetzer more strongly than the activity itself. And that might be because when it comes to Hirurei Aveira, there's never any satisfaction or completion of the act, and therefore it remains as something that pulls on the individual, whether according to Rashi it weakens the individual, whether according to the Tosfot Arid it causes them to have desire and the Yetzer Hara to burn up inside of them. That's because it never reaches a point of satisfaction, as opposed to the Aveira itself, which reaches a point where the person has supposedly fed the desire, and therefore it no longer weakens their body, and it doesn't plague them on and onwards. The other possibility is that Hirurei Aveira versus Aveira, Hirurei Aveira are something that a person can control. Thoughts about Arayot are things that a person can do in their imagination and continue to be involved in such an Aveira even without the participation of another party. An Aveira actually carrying out such Arayot would require the participation of another party, and it's not really available all the time to individuals. And therefore, Hirurei Aveira are more likely to be a problem for the individual than the Aveira itself, because it's something that's self-inflicted and something actually that can be done by the person themselves. In addition, a person may not feel that that type of Aveira is more problematic because it's just the thought about it versus the action itself. And therefore, they might play down Hirurei Aveira and not do tshuva or have charota on the Hirurei Aveira. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim has the most interesting explanation, which is that when it comes to an individual, a person is comprised of a seichel, the mind, and according to the Rambam, that is the highest part of the person's spirituality, is the seichel, the ability to comprehend God and to use your mind for things of kedusha. And then body, which is chomer, which is simply a vehicle or a mechanism for accomplishing those things of the seichel. And so therefore an aveira, or actually doing arayot, is a sin of the goof, which just is the mechanism for doing that which is right. It's a mechanism for acting. Hirurei Aveira is a perversion of the most holy and highest elevated part of an individual, which is the seichel, the mind of the individual, which was dedicated or should be dedicated to lofty ideals, lofty thoughts, and coming close to God. If it's perverted and used, lehurei aveira, that's a greater sin than the aveira itself and misusing the goof or doing something with the goof. And so that's how the Rambam explains this, Hirurei Aveira, Kashum Me'Aveira. And that's really the language that's used in Tefillat Zakah on Erev Yom HaKippurim, the vidui that's written by the Chayodom, that speaks to this idea of misusing of Evarim, or misusing of the body for Aveirot. Over there he speaks about the mind, or the Seichel, which should have been in thoughts of Torah and Kedusha, instead are perverted. And in Hirurei Aveira, according to the Rambam, is the ultimate perversion of the Tzelem Elokim. Or the Ben Yoyada makes a suggestion over here that Hirurei Aveira means that the kavanah, or the intent in the Aveira, is more impactful than the Aveira itself. What differentiates between Shogeg, unintentional Aveira, and Mezid, intentional Aveira, is the makshava, is the thought or the intent that you have. And therefore the Hirurei Aveira, that which you're thinking about, or that which is premeditated or intended in an Aveira, has more impact or is more impactful in terms of the problem with the Aveira than the Aveira itself, which had it been no thought associated with it, might have just been a shogeg or an ones. The simanech, and the way to remember that is recha de bisra, that sometimes the meat that's on the barbecue is more enticing than actually eating the meat itself. The smell of that meat sometimes can draw you even more than the meat itself. That we've seen before already in this Masechta back on Daf Chaf Aleph, where the Gemara talks about the miracles in the Mikdash. And one of those miracles was the fact that a woman never hipila mi reach basara kodesh, that she never miscarried because of smelling the meat from the Mikdash, from the Kodeshim, as well as the fact that The smell of the meat can weaken the individual or drive the desires of the individual more than the eating of the meat or the experiencing of the eating itself. And now the Gemara along these lines mentions another item like that, which is shili dekaito kashi mikaito. The tail end of the summer is worse than the summer itself. The hottest time of the year is in the summer solstice, and that's when you would have expected it to be hotter. On the other hand, the Gemara says here, in Elul, in September time, the heat then is even worse than the heat that's found in June and July time. Simanech tanur shkira is a oven that is continually heated up. An oven that's heated up once takes a lot of wood to heat it up. If it's already been heated up once and then you want to heat it up again, it takes less firewood to heat it up. And each subsequent time that you want to heat up the oven, it takes less and less to get it to the higher temperatures because there's an embedded heat in it. Similarly, with regards to the ambient air, the fact that we've gone through the whole summer means that the ambient air has been heated by the sun. It's true of the sea as well, that the ocean temperatures rise throughout the summer. And then the water is still warm in September and October from the heat of the summer. So the same thing here, that the ambient temperatures are heated all the way through the summer. Therefore, a little heat in September can be much worse than the heat in July because it's building on the heat that is already in the atmosphere, already in the ambient temperatures that have been heated up through the summer. Now, the next of these sayings is, Ishta de Sitva, fever during the wintertime is kashe midikaito, and fever during the summertime, simanech, and the way to remember that is tanura krira. When you have a cold tanur, as we mentioned before, it takes a lot more wood to heat it up. So when the ambient temperature is cold, and the individual themselves is cold, and then they have a fever, the fact that that fever rises so high is an indication that there must be something really hot in the individual, burning up in the individual. Supposed to when the ambient temperatures are warm, and then the person has a fever, takes less effort to bring their temperature up in their body. Therefore, fever during the winter is much more problematic. Next one is migmar ba'atikta kashe mechadato. The way that Rashi describes over there is that trying to learn something that someone forgot is harder than to learn something new. So if you learn something and forgot it, to recall that or to try to work on it to then remember it is much harder than simply learning something new and having to remember that. And the siman for that is tina bar tina, which Rashi describes over here, that when you want to make teat, when you're trying to make cement, if you use old bricks or cement and crush them up and use it to make cement, then it doesn't mix as well. It does not create a good or solid cement. Whereas if you use fresh sand or earth to make the cement or make the teat, it goes much smoother and it mixes much easier. So to hear something new goes in and is able to be recalled and placed into the memory more than something that was once there and then lost, to quote unquote reuse it again to bring it back is much harder. Or the other way to explain it is that something that a person forgot does not sit well with the things that a person remembers. And so if you forgot something, it's much harder then to bring it back and to join it with things that you already have in your memory versus something new. And the hint or the siman of tina bar tina is that it's hard to join together stuff that's already been mixed, the stuff that hasn't been mixed, and therefore things that are remembered are hard to put together, don't match well with things that have been forgotten. So that's the end of this series now, and now the Gemara jumps back to discussing Rabbi's statement before that the moonlight is different than the sunlight. So I'm Rabbi Abo, my time with the Rabbi. Where did Rabbi get this information from, or where does he know this from? It's a little bit of a strange question because it's an empirical question, and Rabbi's just telling you what he empirically knows. So either it could be because there are Tanaim that disagree, and therefore the Gemara wants a source text for Rabbi's position. Or it could be that the Gemara is looking for the ramifications or importance of Rabbi's statement, maybe in interpreting a pasuk, dichtiv, because he quotes it from Lamatzeach Ayalet HaShachar, that for the conductor on the Ayalet HaShachar, he's more than David, a psalm of David. So now the question as to what Ayelet HaShachar means, Rashi claims that Ayelet HaShachar is a musical instrument, or the Ibn Ezra and others suggest that it's connected to the word Ayal, which means a strong, or with the strength of the dawn. That's what Ayelet HaShachar means. And the Radak brings a third interpretation, which is that Ayelet HaShachar is Kochava Boker, is the morning star, because in the Yerushalmi, Chazal call the Kochava Boker, the morning star, Ayalta, and we'll see why that's important in a second. So the Gemara claims that Rabbi's position comes or derives from this pasuk, because my Ayala, Zo Karnea Mafzilot, the Kanalukan. Just like the deer, Ayala over here is not an Ayal in the sense of a ram, but it's an Ayala, a deer, and it's the male deer, not the female deer, because in general the females don't have such complex or wild antlers like the males do. But what it's suggesting is that these antlers that mitfatzilot, that they branch off into many different sections, lukan and lukan, and that is because either every year they shed their horns and then they grow back the next year, and then in the subsequent year they grow with more offshoots or shoots that come off of them, or if they continue to grow, then they grow other shoots or new splits in the horns in each subsequent year. So too, the light of the sunrise disperses or diffuses in all directions. And so that's how he knew that the light of the sun or daybreak is different than that of the moon. So Amar Rabbi Zera, Lama Nimshla Esther La Ayala. So here there's an underlying assumption, which is that the Mizmor here is said about Esther, which is brought also in the Gemara in Megillah, which suggests that it's about Esther because the second Pasuk says, Keli, Keli, Lama Azabtani. God, God, why have you forsaken me, abandoned me? Why are you so far away from delivering me and from my anguished calling and roaring? And the Gemara in Megillah suggests that when Esther was approaching Ahasuerus to beg his indulgence, and she was risking her life and going there, as she passed the room of the idol worship, then the Ruach HaKodesh left her, and she in this Mizmor Tehillim calls out, Keli, Keli, lama zabtani, how could you forsake me? How could you leave me at this critical moment? I need your help. And they attribute that to Esther. It's also found in the Shir HaShirim Rabbah and the Shochar Tov and other Midrashim that this was said about Esther, Metzeach Ayayelet HaShachar. The reason that it's so interesting is because Esther is probably derived from the Persian god Ishtar. And the Persian god of Ishtar was the goddess of love, war, fertility, and sexuality. And she was represented by the planet Venus, or an eight-pointed star, which is the morning star. And so it's very interesting that Esther, Ishtar, who's connected with Venus or the morning star, Chazal say, is associated with this Perek in Tehillim, L'matzeach Hayelet HaShachar, which the Radak connects with the morning star. It's very interesting that Chazal connect between Esther and Hayelet HaShachar, which deals with her name as Ishtar, and was found in the pantheon of the Persian gods, with this L'matzeach Hayelet HaShachar. And so the Gemara here says, why is Esther compared to the Ayala? Not the Ayala Tashacha here, but the Ayala, like a deer. Tomar lecha ma Ayala rachmat sar v'chaviva al ba'ala kol sha'a v'sha'a. Just like by the Ayala, in a sense, her virginity is preserved over time, and therefore the male deer enjoys the intercourse with her time after time, just like the first time. Af Esther chayta chaviva l'cheshverosh kol sha'a v'sha'a k'sha'a rishona. So too, when Ahasuerus consorted with Esther, every time that he got together with her, it was just as good as the first time that he had been together with her. And that's the comparison between Esther and the Ayala. Amravasi, Lama Nimshla Esther the Shachar. Why is Esther compared to the daybreak, to the morning? Lomalacha Mashachar Sof Kol Alayla. Just like the morning is the end of all the nights. Af Esther Sof Kol Anisim. So too Esther is the end of all the miracles. What do you mean? Vayika Chanukah. Chanukah comes after that. Chanukah is after Purim, chronologically, historically. So the Gemara says, Nitana lichtov kamina. Those that were part of the canon. Esther, Purim is the last of the canonized miracles. Even though Chanukah was a miracle, it wasn't part of the canon, it wasn't added to the canon. And therefore, Esther is the end of that. The Marsha over here questions, why is it that all the nisim, all the miracles that happen are compared to night? Night usually has a negative connotation, and daytime is a positive connotation. So why is it that Purim is considered to be the daytime and the other miracles are considered to be nighttime? And if you really thought about it, it might have been just the opposite, that all the other miracles are daytime miracles because they are Nisim Giluim, whereas Purim is a Nes Nistar, it would be at nighttime. So it seems to be just the opposite of what you would have expected. The Marsha explains over here that Purim is the end of the miraculous intervention of God that is canonized, because all the miracles or previous miracles were done at night, like in Tziat Mitzrayim, and many of the other miracles that are mentioned in Tanakh, just like the wiping out of the Assyrian army in the time of Hezekiah HaMelech, many of the things that are mentioned as miraculous throughout Tanakh transpire at night. And so that's what he means, that it's Mashachar Saf Kol Alayla, just like daybreak's the end of the night, it's saying it's the end of all the miracles that are mentioned in Tanakh that traditionally take place at night. And that's what it means. And similarly with Purim, he brings that Haman hatched his plan at night and began the whole process of that, which was going to be problematic at night. And therefore, it's also a miracle that takes place at night, but it's the tail end of those canonized miracles that are at nighttime. And then the Gemara's question is from Chanukah, which is also a miracle that took place at night. How come that's not also included? And the Gemara's answer is that it wasn't a canonized miracle. So Gemara says, Anicha the Mandamar Esther Nitna Lichtov. That works well according to the Mandamar in the Gemara in Megillah, that Esther was given Beruach HaKodesh, and it was meant to be canonized. I mean, there's a machloket in the Gemara with regards to many of the Megillot as to whether they're Mitame Yadayim. Tame Yadayim is a siman, it's just a symptom of the fact that they have Kedusha of the canon. And that is that all books that were Kadosh, as we saw in the Gemara in the beginning of Sechet Shabbat, they were gozer on Svarim, that they made the hands of Sheni the Tuma, which could ruin Truma. The reason they did that was because people were storing the holy books together with the Truma, because they were both Kadosh. And when the animals or the rodents came to eat the grains, they ended up eating the Svarim HaKadoshim. So in order to prevent people from doing that, they were gozer on Svarim, if they were Kadosh, that they were Sheni the Tuma, maybe in time Yadayim, and cause problems for Truma. So the indication of something as being a book that is Kadosh, as well as Mitame Yadayim. So the Gemara Megillah is a machloket as to whether Megillat Esther is Mitame Yadayim or not Mitame Yadayim, which basically is a machloket as to whether it was part of the canon or not part of the canon. That seems to be what the Gemara is referencing to here. The Tosfot Yeshanim claims that there's nobody who believes that it wasn't Nitan to be written down, it's just a question of why. Was it written down because there was a divine directive and therefore it's part of the canon? Or was it a rabbinically ordained writing of Megillah? But everybody agrees it was written down. It should have been written down. Just a question of what is the status of that writing or the Kedusha of that writing that was written down. Although from the Tosfot and Gemara Megillah, Davov makes it sound like that the Deah that believes that it wasn't Nitan Tlichatov means that it's not divinely ordained, nor does it mean that it was rabbinically ordained. It wasn't ordained at all. Well, that seems to be strange because we don't really see an opinion like that within the Tanaim. But nevertheless, according to that Manda Amar, that Esther was not Nitna Lichtov, then how do you explain the meaning of Ayelet HaShachar? What is the Shachar over here? Ma'ik and the Meimar. So, Yimukim Lak, Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefet. Rabbi Lazar. They all explain the Pasuk like the way that Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefet is Doreshit. Amar Rabbi Yamin Bar Yefet, Amar Rabbi Lazar. Lama Nimshlu Tfilatam Shel Tzadikim Ka'ayelet. Why are the Tfilot of the Tzadikim compared to an Ayelet, to a deer? Lama Lecha, Ma'ayala Zu, Kozman Shemigadelet Karna. Just like as its horns continue to grow, its antlers expand, myth. They bifurcate, they move in all different directions. And so too the tzadikim, the more and more that they daven, the more and more chance that they will be answered. And as Rashi explains over here, the high shachar, lashon tfilahu. The word shachar does not mean morning, but rather means to daven, to pray. And he quotes the pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, ruchi bikirbi ashachrecha. So that the shachar is used as an expression of tefillah, and therefore the matzeach ala tefillah. It's basically saying that this is a matzeach, this is a conductor speaking about tefillah. And what's the issue of tefillah that it's speaking about? That it's ayala. Now even though the Gemara's question is, how do you explain the word shachar here? And in the end, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Yefet is explaining that it is dealing with ayala. Rashi indicates through his statement that shachar is tefillah. And therefore, it's the tzaddikim, the more that they daven, the more that their tefillah is heard. And that's the meaning of the word shachar. The more they daven, like the ayala, shachar, they will have a daybreak. Their tefillot will be answered. There will be light to their tefillot. And in that way, it's explained the meaning of shachar both as tefillah, but also as light, that their tefillot will see the light of day because they will be answered. Now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah and says that it's a little confused about what the Mishnah says. It says, shachatu et tamid. One time they made a mistake and they shechted the tamid. Eimat, when did this incident transpire? Ilayim Rabishayim Otashana, it was not on Yom Kippur. Losagi delav Kohen Gadol. Then why was the Kohen Gadol involved in the story? What does it have to do with the Kohen Gadol if it's not on Yom Kippur? Elabi Yom HaKippurim. So let it suggest that it happened on Yom Kippur, this incident. Mor levana mi'iko. Since when do you have the moonlight on Yom Kippur? Because when it comes to the cycle of the moon through the month, in the beginning of the month, the moon rises in the late afternoon, early evening, and then sets pretty closely after that, and it then expands its time in the horizon day after day. At that time, it rises very close to where the sun sets on the western horizon, and then it sets. When it reaches the middle of the month, the moon rises on the western side and then travels the entire skyline until it reaches the eastern side and sets in the morning on the eastern side. But it never rises on the eastern side, the same side as the sun, except for the tail end of the month. At the tail end of the month, the moon rises late in the night towards the time of sunrise on the eastern horizon. So that's the only time you would have a situation in which you would have confusion of the moon rising and the daybreak. So that would be at the tail end of the month. The problem is that Yom Kippur is on the 10th of the month. It's nowhere near the end of the month. And in time of Yom Kippur, the moon would have risen on the western horizon early in the evening, and it would not have been rising on the eastern side late in the nighttime or early in the morning. And so then it doesn't make sense that this case is connected to Yom HaKippurim. So the problem with the Gemara is that the Gemara says that why do they have all this intricacy with regards to asking whether the day broke or not? Because they said Pamachat, there was an incident. Then they mentioned the incident. And then they say that they take the Kohen Gadol down to Beit HaTfilah. Makes it sound like the incident is connected to Yom HaKippurim or the story of the Kohen Gadol. Problem with that is it couldn't have taken place, that story, on Yom Kippur because you wouldn't have had this moon rising at the same horizon or time as the sun was supposed to rise. And if you say it's not connected to Yom Kippur, then why is the Kohen Gadol going down to the Beit HaTfilah? So it seems to me that this story is somewhat misplaced. And in the end, the Gemara says that's exactly what happened here. Ki Amar, Achi Kamar, Ubiyom HaKippurim, on Yom Kippur, Ki Amar Barak Barkai, as we saw in the bright that it was brought by Rabbi Shmuel, says Barak Barkai. So too in the Mishnah, once they had ascertained that it was already daybreak and the dawn had broken, then the Mishnah would continue later on in the Mishnah, Horidu Kohen Gadol the Beit HaTfilah. And that's the narrative that's being told in the Mishnah about Yom HaKippurim. Interjected in the middle of that story is an explanation for why they went through all that trouble about figuring out whether it really was daybreak or really was dawn. And that is because they inserted the story. The story is telling you, some other time, they had a problem. That some other time explains why they went through all of this process, Adje Bechevron, and they said all of this intricate language to ensure that it was daybreak because of an incident that did not take place in Yom Kippur. So it's as if it is a diversion or a sidebar in the Mishnah just to explain to you what had happened prior to that. But the Mishnah just continues from after they saw that it was Barak Barkai, then Kohen Gadol, you read the Beit HaTfilah, and the Kohen Gadol is not connected to that story over there. Except according to the Rambam, who in the Perush Mishnayot says the story took place twice, and they had the problem once, not on Yom Kippur, and it also happened on Yom Kippur for a different reason, they made the same mistake again. Now, Tani Avua de Rabbi Avin, so Avua de Rabbi Avin brings a braita, Lozo Bilvad, Amrut, not only problematic in terms of the Tamid Shel Shachar, if they shechted it before daybreak, that's not the only time it's problematic. If you did a shechting of an oaf in the Mikdash, which is done by Malika, which is the Kohen putting his thumb through the back of the neck of the oaf, or Kemitza is taking the handful out of the Mincha, both of those in the Gemara in Zvachim and Menachot are paralleled with Shechita. So even though the din of daytime is learned out of the words Bayom Zivchachem that's found in Parshat Kedoshim, nevertheless, we still apply it to Malikat Of and Kemitzat HaMincha, despite the fact that they're not Shechita, but because the process of Malika by the Of and Kemitza by the Mincha is parallel to the Shechita by Kedoshim, therefore, their activity at night is problematic, just like shechting the korban would be problematic at night. And therefore, if they were performed at night, tisareif, they would be burnt. Although Tosafot in the Gemara Megillah on Daf Chof Amud Bet and the Ritva over here on the Mishnah suggests, and even though all avod has to be done during the day because of the pasuk that's found in Parsha Tzav, says B'yom Tzavato, means that during the day, that's when avodah takes place in the Mikdash, that's not sufficient to tell us that din with regards to Shechita, because as we saw 2 daf ago, that when it comes to Shechita, Shechita is first of all Kshira Bizar, and it's not deemed to be an Avoda. And since it's missing both of those aspects, it's not covered by the Beyom Tzavoto, and therefore it needs a special limud of Beyom Zivchavchem. Whereas it's possible that Malikat Of and Kemitzat HaMincha, which are not Ksherim Bizar, and are deemed to be Avoda, would then be covered by Yom Tzavoto, and you wouldn't need the limit of Yom Zivchachem in order to make them pasul. Now, Tosafot says, why do you need the pasuk at all, or why do you need this limit at all to tell you that they're pasul? There are other problems with the Malikat Of, or Kemitzat HaMincha, which is you're not allowed to bring anything in the Mikdash before you bring the Tamid Shel Shachar. It has to be Ha'olah, the first Olah in the Mikdash. That's number one. And number two is that there is no Avoda that is allowed to take place in the Mikdash until the doors of a heichal are opened up. And here the doors were not opened because they hadn't processed the tamid shel shachar yet, and therefore they hadn't opened up the doors. So why isn't this melikat of, or this kmitza mincha pasul for all these other technicalities? Nothing to do with the fact that we compare it to the shechting of a korban, or we learned it out of Biyom Zivachem, or we learned it out for Biyom Tzabato. Then inherently there's a problem here because they are at the wrong time in the Mikdash. So the Baal Tosafot suggests that the restriction against doing anything before the time of Shachar is putting things on the Mizbeach. It's not a restriction against any Avodah. It's just a restriction against Haktara, placing something on the Mizbeach, and that is restricted before Tamid Shel Shachar. But over here we're not talking about things going on the Mizbeach, we're talking about Melikat Oof, the shechting of the Oof, and Kmitzat HaMincha, taking a handful out of the Mincha, which are processes leading up to Haktara, but they aren't Haktara themselves, and therefore they're not Pasul. Or Tosafot on the Amud Bet, is a very long Tosafot, spends a lot of time suggesting that the din of having to not do anything before Tamid Shel Shachar is only a mitzvah lechatchila, or maybe just the gezerah derabanan, and it's not necessarily something that is asur b'diavad, and therefore it would not be posel in this case. Now with regards to the doors being open, the Baal HaTosafot say, we learned that out from Shlamim, where it says that you have to shecht et petach ol moed, by the door of the ol moed, but when the door of the ol moed is open. So he says that that's specifically associated with shechita, and not with kmitza or melika. And therefore only shechita is pasul if the dotot ha'echal are not open, but melika and kmitza would not be affected by that. Now the Gemara continues and says, Bishlam ha'olat ha'of, ma'idah v'havo. Okay, you can't reverse the fact that you already killed the bird by doing melika. It's an irreversible action, and therefore it has to go out the Beitza Sreifa. Elikometz, removing a portion of the mincha with one's hand, nehadra v'nehader. Why can't we put it back in? The komets that you took off improperly, why can't we put it back into the mincha? V'nikmitza b'yomama. And then we'll take it off again during the daytime. If the action is not considered to be efficacious at night, then just return it to its former state, put it back into the kli, and then when it comes to daybreak, you'll take it out again. Why is that not a reversible action, and why does it have to go out to the Beit HaSreifa? So hu tanila v'hu amar lo. He brought the braita, and he explained, kli sharet mekadshin afilu shelo bizmano. That kli sharet have the ability to mekadish something, even not at its proper time. So even though it's nighttime, it's not the proper time to bring this kometz or do this kmitza. Nevertheless, when you put it into a kli sharet, it's mekadesh it, even in its inappropriate time. And once it's mekadesh it, you can't return it to the mincha that was beforehand. So even though when one takes off a kmitza from the mincha, that which is left behind or residually is called shirayim, and then the item you took off is defined as a kometz, so now they are no longer considered to be what's called tevel, that they are mixed together, the kometz and the shirayim, before you take off the kmitza, take off the kometz, because now they are identified discreetly and separately. So the Gemara's question is, now did put it back together? How could you put it back together if you already separated them? The answer is that if an action at night is not considered to be efficacious, then why can't you just return it to its former state? If you didn't make it into a kometz, then that which is left behind is not shirayim either. And if therefore if their status never changed, it's as if you cut the mincha in half and took one half to one side, one half to the other side, you could just put them back together, and it'll still be the same mincha that it was before. So that's the nature of the Gemara's question. The answer that's given by Avuah de Rabbi Natan is that the kli sharet are impactful over here. Now, according to Rashi, and we'll come back and discuss this more in detail, the placement of the kometz into the kli sharet is what then defines it as a kometz, and therefore, since it's defined as a kometz, it cannot be returned to the former state that it was before, mixing it together with the shirayim, because you mix them together, you have kometz and shirayim mixed together, you won't have a mincha that's tevel for kmitza. So Gemara challenges that and says, Meitave, Zeklal, this is the principle that we have, kol akarei bayom, kadosh bayom. Anything that is brought during the day, meaning that it's kodoshim that need to be done or processed during the day, then if you put it into a kli sharet during the day, it's kadosh. Kol akarei balayla. Anything that's put in at night is kadosh balayla. The girsa that we have here is if it's processed at night or something that's done at night, when you put in a kli sharet at night, it becomes kadosh at night. Kol akarei ben bayom u ben balayla. Something that is processed both during the day and night, kadosh ben bayom u ben balayla. You can make it kadosh in a kli sharet, whether at daytime or nighttime. The Gemara in Temura seems to only have two sections to this, and so does the Maran Mirunchenberg over here, favors taking out the middle case and saying there are really only two cases here. Anything that's put on during the day is kadosh during the day in a kli sharet. Anything that's put on at night is kadosh at night. And then, of course, anything that's during the day and night would be kadosh in either one of those. That's a derivative of the other two statements, and therefore you only need two statements over here. But the Gemara says, katani miyat, at least you can see from this, or you can read medayek, kolkei bayom, kadosh bayom. That's something that is brought during the day, like a mincha, like a olat ha'of, then bayomin, they're only kadosh in a kli sharei during the day, belayla lo, but at night, not. And so over here, why are you telling me that the kometz was put into a kli sharei that's impactful on the mincha, that it's irreversible, if it has no impact at night, because you can't process something or be mekadesh something in a kli sharei, if it's a daytime avoda in a kli sharei at nighttime? Where it says, Dilma eino kadosh li karev, abo kadosh li pasel. So the answer to the Gemara is that there are different types of kedusha that can be generated by a kli sharei. Placing something into a kli sharei elevates the item to have what's called kedushat aguf. Until that point in time, it had kedushat damim, which is that it's monetarily kadosh. It was purchased with the intent to make it kadosh, but it doesn't get elevated to a status whereby it itself is inherently kadosh, has kedushat aguf, until it's placed into a kli sharei. The difference being that until that time, if it's only kadosh in a monetary sense, kedushat damim, it can be redeemed if there's something wrong with it. It doesn't have certain psulim that are associated with kedusha or being of kodesh. Once it's elevated to the level of kedushat aguf, being placed into a kli sharei, it now elevates its status, first of all, that it can be placed on the Mizbeach. Number two is, it now makes it vulnerable to things that can affect things that are Kodesh. And that is, it's subject now to Tumah, even a reveal of Tumah. It also now is subject to Yotze. You can't take it out of the Azarah any longer. If you take it out of the Azarah, it'll become Pasul. You can't leave it overnight. It'll be Pasul Belina. So there are other ramifications to be placed in a kli sharei. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that you can bifurcate those issues. And yes, eino chanami, that you can't place it into a kli sharei at night to make it have kedushat aguf. Therefore, it'll be ready to be used during the day. And you could be makriven on the mizbeach. That it doesn't elevate it to that status of kedushat aguf. But when it does elevate it to the kedusha, that it has all these negative ramifications and all the impacts of being something that has kadosh kedushat aguf, including tumah, notar, yotze. All those will be applicable to it. So yes, the Braita is correct with regards to the fact that you cannot be mekadesh it in the positive sense to have kedushat aguf at night when it's a daytime korban. But what the kli sharei can do is it can elevate it to a status of kedushat aguf, so now it's vulnerable to all of these possible psulim that are associated with kedusha. And so what Rashi explains over here is that the placement of the kometz into the kli sharei, at first we thought, is what defines it as a kometz. And since it defines it as a kometz, you can no longer then return it to the shiraim of the mincha, because when that is defined as a kometz, then the residual is defined as shiraim, and you can no longer mix them together. They're now discrete items. And then the Gemara says, well, wait a minute, you can't be mekadesh it at night. So then how does it ever become a kometz at night? So the Gemara's answer is, yeah, it can't become a kometz that can go on the Mizbeach through that kedushat aguf, but it is subject to the vulnerabilities of kedusha once it has already been placed into a kli sharei. And then Rashi suggests that therefore, when the dawn breaks on that morning, it's as if it's gone through lina. And therefore the kometz is nifsal belina because it now stayed, quote unquote, overnight in a kli sharei and was exposed overnight. And therefore it's now subject to lina. And that's how Rashi explains the problem over here, which is that, yes, you can't elevate it to a status of a kometz of being in a kli sharei, but it does subject it to lina once it's placed into the kli sharei. And now that it's subject to lina, once the day breaks, it won't have the possibility of replacing this kometz, because this kometz is now pasul belina, and you can't take a second kometz off the shiraim, because there was already a kometz that was removed from it, and you can't, taking off a second kometz isn't going to do anything now, because they were already defined as shiraim. Now Tosfot is bothered by two things over here, the first of which is, if we're already amending the Braita to say that the kometz was taken off and placed into a kli sharei, why don't we go one step further and say not only was it placed into a kli sharei, it was put on the Mizbeach already, and it was mukrav on the Mizbeach, and that's why we can't reverse the process. Why does the Gemara stop at the fact that it was placed into a kli sharei? So Tosafot says that is because if it was already muktar on the Mizbeach, everybody would agree that it's pasul, because there's no haktara at night. That we know for sure. That's something that is pshita to us, that haktara kometz is only in the daytime, and therefore it would be an irreversible act that would have ruined the shiraim and have no possibility of being rectified. And that's not a chiddush that the Braita would be telling us. It must be that the Braita is telling us a chiddush, and the only way to have a chiddush is to say that placing it into a kli sharei, even though it cannot be mekadeshit to gain the status of a kometz that can go on Mizbeach, nevertheless it is mekadeshit to the point where it can create a psul. That's the first thing the Bali Tosafot suggests. The second thing the Bali Tosafot say is, if it's true what Rashi says over here, that the placement into a Kli Sharet causes you a psul lina when it hits daybreak, then why do you have to worry about the comets being placed into a Kli Sharet? The mincha itself has to be placed into a Kli Sharet before you take the comets off of it, and it attains Kedushat HaGuf, and that Kedushat HaGuf would be no different than the comets' Kedushat HaGuf. If that's the case, the Shirayim themselves, or the Mincha itself, should be Pasul Belina, irrespective of whether the Kometz is placed into a Kli Sharet or not. And he says, I don't understand why Rashi went through all the trouble of saying that the Kometz was placed into a Kli Sharet. Could be just that the Mincha itself was placed into a Kli Sharet. So Tosfot says the reason that it is important that the Kometz was placed into a Kli Sharet over here is that had it been that simply the Mincha was in a Kli Sharet and the Kometz wasn't taken off of it, it only become Pasul at daybreak because of the problem of Lina. It's not an inherent Pasul in it that it was placed into a Kli Sharet at night. It wouldn't be something that the Braita says Tisaref Miyad, that you can burn right away. In order for it to be something that you can burn right away, it has to have a Pasul Bigufo. It has to have something that's inherently problematic with the Korban. And that only happens when you take off a kamitza, when you take off the kometz from it. That is something that it's posel begufo of the mincha. And so then the Gemara's question about Kli Sharet or not Mikadesh, it would be the equivalent of taking out a kometz from a mincha that's found in a Kli of Chulin, something that has nothing to do with Kodesh. So if it can't be that the mincha is attached to the Kli Sharet, then taking off a kometz is not a meaningful act. That's what the Gemara answers, that it's not a Kli Sharet to be Mekadeshit so that it'll be properly processed on the Mizbeach, but it's sufficient enough that the Kedusha now makes it that when you take a Kometz and remove the Kometz from there, that it will be impactful. And that impact is a Psul Begufa Korban, and therefore according to Tosfot, it's Nisraf Miyad. And the Kli Az Yaakov points out that that is actually a machloket here between Rashi and Tosfot as to how inherent this Psul is. According to Rashi, even after you take off the Kometz and place it into Kli Sharet, Rashi says that the only time it becomes Pasul is at daybreak. As Tosafot says, that's not right. That the reason it becomes Pasul over here is because when you took off the Kometz from the Mincha that was in the Kli Sharet, that's a Pasul in the Gufa Mincha. That creates a problem for the Mincha itself and for the Kometz, and they are burnt immediately because it's Pasul Begufo. But then that leaves Rashi's explanation as somewhat difficult, because Rashi's explanation is, why do you need the Kometz to go into a Kli Sharet? The same would be true of the Mincha, that as soon as you reach daybreak, there'd be Lina, and it would be Pasul. And so what's different between the Kometz going to Kli Sharet and the Mincha itself going to the Kli Sharet? And Tosafot's question is a strong question against Rashi. And Marashah makes a suggestion that, according to Rashi, the Mincha wasn't placed into Kli Sharet, and that's why it's only after the Kometz went into a Kli Sharet. But in Achanami, had the Mincha been placed into Kli Sharet, that could have caused the problem. And Tosafot in Menachot and Daf Kuf says something similar, that even after you take off the Kometz and place it in a Kli Sharet, it only becomes Pasol Belina with Alot HaShachar. And therefore he says over here, explaining this Gemara, that it's lav dafka, when it says, v'kemitzat mincha b'layla tisareif, it's not necessarily kemitzat mincha, it can even be the mincha itself being placed into a Kli Sharet, will cause it to be pasul. And the Siach Yitzhak says on behalf of Rashi that he really agrees with Bali Tosufot, that when you take off a kometz, it makes it a psul haguf, and therefore it could be nisraf miyad. The machloket between them is, how does it become a kometz? According to Rashi, it only becomes a kometz where you have to be sareif miyad, once it's placed into a Kli Sharet, and you would have to say that since it has the possibility of becoming Pasul Belina Balot HaShachar, therefore Kedusha has impact on it, and therefore since Kedusha has impact on it, and it was Nikmetza Belailo, it's Mitkadeshet, and it's Nifsal Miyad. Whereas the Bali Tosafot believe that once you take off a Kometz, when the Mincha is in a Kli Sharet, that's enough to make it a Psul HaGuf, and it can be Nisraf Miyad once the Kometz has been taken off of it. And it doesn't need to be placed into a Kli Sharet, although it's much harder to read that into the words of Rashi, who seems to indicate that the Kometz in the Kli Sharet is only Pasul because of Lina, and that favors the Kilat Yaakov's explanation of the Machlok between Rashi and Tosafot. So Meitiv Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera now challenges this idea that if you put something on at the wrong time, you can still be Mekadesh it, at least for its negative ramifications, and the object can attain Kedushat HaGuf for those negative ramifications. Sider et lechem v'et bazichim machar Shabbat. Person put the lechem apanim and the frankincense onto the Shulchan after Shabbat. The proper way to put the lechem apanim on the Shulchan is on Shabbat itself. And then on the following Shabbat, the bazichim, the frankincense, is mukrav al mizbeach. And then the lechem apanim are distributed to the Kohanim. But over here, they put it on Sunday instead of on Shabbat itself. So now it's what's called Mechusar Zman. And the following Shabbat, if you were makriv the bazichim, it wouldn't do anything because it hasn't sat on the Shulchan for 7 days, which is the minimum amount of time that the lechem apanim need to be in on the shulchan in order to be kasher. So then the Gemara quotes from that braita and says psula. Rashi eliminates the word psula here because it's obvious that it's not psula because the braita is about to say ketzad yaseh. How do I rectify the situation? Well, if it's psula, then what do you mean? How do I rectify the situation? It's psula. So Rashi eliminates it because he understands the word psula here as referencing to the lechem apanim itself. On the other hand, if you look in the Tosfot Yeshanim, he says perish. What does psula mean? Haktarat psula. The bazichim that were put on the mizbeach, they are psulim. And they are not matir, the lechem. So the psula is not referencing to the lechem. The lechem was going to, as the Mishbrite is going to say, they're going to stay on the shulchan for another week. But the bazichim that you were makriv had no impact, and they are psulim. And that's what the psula references to, and therefore they are willing to leave the girsa in, unlike Rashi. Ketzed yaseh, so what do you do? Yanichenu l'shabbat haba. Just leave it on for another week on the shulchan, because then it'll have a full 7 days. And then after that another 7 days elapse on that Shabbat, at the end of basically 2 weeks, you're going to put the bazichim on the mizbeach, and then the lechem apanim would be mutar to be eaten by the kohanim. Shafilu amdal shulchan yamim rabim ein b'kach klum. Because there's no problem with lechem apanim staying on the shulchan. They can stay on as long as they want, as long as there's no lina, there's no being there longer than they should have been there. And right now, they haven't been on for 7 days, so they don't have any lina. And 7 days, that begins with the Shabbat and ends with the Shabbat. So only starting with the next Shabbat will they then be in the regular cycle. On that second Shabbat, meaning 13 days later, will they have completed 7 days from Shabbat to Shabbat, and only then will it be problematic. But in the interim, they can leave him on the Shulchan without any problem. Vamai, why isn't it problematic? Tikdosh viti pasel. If you tell me that something shalob is mano, okay, it doesn't have kedusha to make it into something that's positive and have the positive aspects that it's kasher, but nevertheless it has negative aspects to make it pasul belina, and make it problematic if it's Yotze and all the other factors that are affected by the negative ramifications of having Kedushat HaGuf. When you put the Lechem HaPanim onto the Shulchan, it's Mekadeshit B'Kedushat HaGuf, and therefore B'ti Pasel, it should become Pasul, just like that happened with the Kometz and the Mincha that were done at night. It was done at the wrong time, but it still worked enough to have those negative ramifications. So through here, when you put the Lechem HaPanim on Sunday onto the Shulchan, it should have negative ramifications. And then when it comes to the following Shabbat, it should be classified as Lina, as being on there too long, and it should be problematic. Samarova, man kamotiv, shaper kamotiv. The question is a very strong question, and it is a good question. The problem is that you're not asking a question from a braita on an amora. If you did that, you could just say the amora is wrong, and that's the braita. The problem is that Avuah Rabbi Avin, which we began the suya with, is quoting a braita as well. So now you have a stira between the braita, you have to reconcile that stira. So how do we deal with that? That's why he says, he's saying a braita also, so we have to explain this. So the explanation is, Laila e mechuser zman, yom mechuser zman. Nighttime is not considered to be mechuser zman, whereas daytime is. Meaning that the night before the day where it would be kasher to bring such a korban, that is already not considered mechuser zman. It's the same day. There's a technical problem, which is it's only korbanot only brought during the day. But you're in the proper day, you just haven't reached daytime. And therefore, when you put it into a kli sharet at night, it will be impactful, even though you haven't reached daytime yet. On the other hand, when it comes to the lechem apanim, when you put them on Sunday, you knew that that was a meaningless act when you put them on Sunday, because Sunday is nowhere near the day that you were supposed to put them on. You're supposed to put them on Shabbat. So had you put them on Shabbat, then they would have been kadosh. But now when you put them on Sunday, and Sunday has no relevance to the day when they were supposed to be on Shabbat, and therefore it has no impact when it's placed onto a kli sharet or onto the shulchan. So now the Gemara says, oh, wait a minute. Kimati bem shimshei tikdosh v'tifso. All right, so then when Friday night shows up, it should be problematic. You're right, when you put it on Sunday, it had no impact. But now it's sitting on the shulchan, and now Friday night comes. Friday night is the night before the day where it should have been put on. And you're telling me now that night of the day where it should be put on, and it hasn't reached daytime yet, is sufficient grounds to allow the kli sharet to create kedushat haguf for the negative ramifications. So why doesn't the lechem apanim also now have the negative ramifications of being on the shulchan on Friday night? So Amar Ravina shekadam b'selko, that they took it off. They put the lechem apanim on Sunday, they left it on so that there's lechem tamid, that it's always on the shulchan. And right before Friday night, they took it off, and they only placed it back on Shabbat morning, in order to avoid this problem of the kli sharet, the shulchan being mekadeshit on the night before to make it pasul. Even if he doesn't take it off the shulchan, it doesn't work. Since they placed it on the shulchan at the wrong time, It's as if a monkey did it, which means that when it comes to being mekadesh something at night, the night before the day time where it would be kasher, that's not considered a mechusar zman. Therefore, when you take an action on that night to do something, that action is impactful and makes it kadosh. When you play something on Sunday night, that action is completely meaningless because there's no connection to Shabbat, the proper time where it should have been placed on the Shulchan. Then when Friday night shows up, your action is long gone. Your action was done already on Sunday. Now it's sitting there passively on the Shulchan. Sitting there passively on the Shulchan is not placing the Lechem onto or into a Kli Sharet on the nighttime before it becomes kasher. It just happens to be there and it's already there. The action is now detached from the moment where it could be kadosh to be pasul. And therefore it's as if a monkey put it on, meaning that there's no meaning to the action or to the fact that the lechem is found on the shulchan going into Friday night. Had you put it on Friday night, you would have been posel the lechem because you took an action at a time that is meaningful and it's problematic because it's the night before the daytime where it would be kasher. But now that you put it on Sunday, it's already detached from the action, the Kedusha that possibly could have devolved on Friday night, and therefore it has no meaning. And that's what the Gemara means when it says it's as if a kof did it, it means that it's a meaningless act. So according to Rashi, the Gemara is cumulative, and therefore Rav Ashi's answer still incorporates that which we said before, which is that Laila ain mechusar zman, Yom is mechusar zman, only the night before something that would be kasher during the daytime of that day can become pasul, and it has this proviso that you have to actively have been mekadesh it at that moment. If it reaches that point in time, and it's passively sitting on the shulchan or in a kli sharet, that's not sufficient grounds to make it that it'll be pasul, because that's as if a kof placed it there. Your action has already been completed, and therefore whatever happens afterwards with regards to kli sharet, when it reaches a point in time that it could have been kasher, is a meaningless act at that point in time, because when it was done, it didn't have any bearing. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot believe that Rav Ashi's answer is almost as if the Gemara said Ella. It's a rejection of what we said before, and it now says that everything is dependent on your machshava. And Tosafot says the following: if you and you did it, you knew it was problematic, and you knew it was a problematic time, then it doesn't work. A kli sharet will not be mekadesh, even for the negative vulnerabilities, if you know for sure it doesn't work. And that's for a person putting the lechem panim on Sunday, he knows it doesn't work. If he's separating out a kmitza at night, and you know it's not the right time, it won't work either. The only time it works is like our Mishnah, where they mistakenly thought it was the time for the tamid to be nishchat, and they shefted it at the wrong time. That's the case where the kli sharet works, even though it's not the appropriate time. And similarly with the kometz, Tosafot says that the case by the kmitza is a case where they thought it was morning, and he did the kmitza at night, and it was a mistake that they did it at night. They thought it was already the time to do the kmitza, and that's why it's effective, according to Rav Ashi. And that's why the lechem apanim doesn't work, but it's not unique to the lechem apanim. It's true of any maaseh, where you know when you do the maaseh that it's clearly the wrong time. There, a kli sharet has no impact. Kli sharet will have impact where you mistakenly think you have the right time, and you do it, assuming that you've done it correctly. In that instance, then the machshava of doing it properly is enough for sufficient grounds to make it that the kli sharet is mekadesh it, even for vulnerabilities. And it would seem from Tosafot that that's not bound by being the night before. That'd be any time, even if the Sunday before when you put it on the Shulchan, if you didn't know that was the wrong time for it, and you thought you were doing it correctly, that might even work to be Mekadesh the Lechem, even though it's so distant from the real time that you're supposed to put it on. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots at the bottom of Chof Tet Amud Bet.